Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for Episode 2 of Effingham Talks, broadcasting from beautiful Stillwell Pines just outside of Springfield, Georgia. Folks, if you're looking for a venue to host your next event, check out their website, www.stillwellpines.com, their Facebook page, Stillwell Pines Event Venue, or call them at 912-665-2631 for a tour. We are your hosts, Tommy Morgan and Frank Norris, joined today by our guest, Springfield City Councilwoman Dee Moncrief, Mike Gerwig, co-chairman of Planning and Zoning in Guyton, Nick Springer, director of programs for the Trutland House, and Curtis Parker, owner of Firefighter Pressure Washing. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dee, I want to start with you today. Could you tell us a little bit about your position as councilwoman and what inspired you to run for office?
I was very blessed to been asked by the former city manager, Brett Bennett, years ago to get involved. And I started actually on the Springfield Revitalization Corporation that's now defunct. That was what they put together to have the Mars Theater really kind of come together. A number of citizens came together to do that. And so I started there briefly, and then he asked me to join the Downtown Development Authority with Springfield. So I went on to that. And once I had spent, I spent 6 years there, and then went on to zoning and planning, because I cannot stress enough, if you're going to be involved in local government, how important it is to understand your zoning and your planning for the area that you're involved with. Spent about a year there, I think, and then a position was opening up on the city council. Former councilman Kenny Usher was rolling off. He decided not to run again, and I qualified and took that position.
Wow. Good for you. Well, where was Springfield at in the revitalization process when you took office?
When I took office, it really had already started to show the things that had been going on in the background for a long, long time. So all the downtown streetscapes had been done. And we had moved all the overground, you know, all the electrical overgrounds had come down and gone underneath, which really kind of, you know, if you ever go down a small town that has that, you know, that when you have the electrical lines running all the way through town, it takes away from the beauty of the buildings and different things. So all of that had already begun, but I had been involved in it because I was on downtown development. So I had already been involved in a lot of that. Obviously, when the Mars Theater opened, that really kind of showcased. But really, the Waltz Building being sold under the DDA, so that was partnered with James Carlson to take over that position with that building and then revitalize it. And you know, that was that's why our DDA was even formed. So our downtown development was formed because we had this large albatross in the middle of town that was about to become empty, and it was 25,000 square feet of under roof, and we did not want it to be just an empty storefront on the downtown and have blight there. So we formed the downtown development because that was going to then give the city a vehicle to be able to move money into that. And help someone take it over. So we were looking for, at first we, I think we thought we were going to have like a outside developer do it.
Yeah.
But we really wanted a hometown hero. So we got that in James Carlson.
Good, good. And then I assume everybody just shortly after followed suit.
There was some, you know, there were some of us that did the early on stuff. So I opened Daisy's Cafe back in 2013.
Okay. Wow.
We were a little sandwich shop. And it was funny because while we were doing the build out, you know, I was new to this. I didn't know what I was doing. Probably a good thing, right? I did not know what I was getting into. So we were doing the build out on what had been a dry cleaners. So you could literally put your finger through a wall just like this, just because all the chemicals and stuff that was in that building. So while we started, it was funny because, you know, we never covered up the windows or anything. We just were doing our thing, and the citizens would duck in and poke their head daily and be like,
"Oh my goodness,
we can't wait for you. We're so excited." And then you'd have the naysayers that would come along and be like, "The health department is never going to let you do this." And so we just did it. We just did it. So, yeah, so me and Cecile Baker, who I absolutely adore, was one of a kind. She had a little funky little shop beside me that did consignment or resale, different things. She was beside me, Jamie Stamsel, which most of y'all know him. So he was across the street, had a little bookstore, and Antiques was there. And so it was us four. I mean, I know there were other businesses, but we really were such a little tight-knit little stronghold to start with. And the Mars wasn't even done yet at that point.
Wow.
So we got going, and we kind of took hold. And then you started, once the Mars opened, you started to really see the revitalization coming through. And then I took on another building. I took on the Sherman and Hem Street building across from City Hall. I bought that and rehabbed that.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And then eventually bought the Webb Ganahan House?
Yeah.
That became Moncrief
Square.
Moncrief Square.
And that's a beautiful place.
Thank you. Very beautiful.
Very beautiful.
That was a God-driven thing, you know. Because I really thought I was just going to put our offices there, our construction offices there. I just wanted a storefront on Main Street for visibility, and I was going to get between the lights. I was real excited about that. But once I realized I had all that land and you know, really had an opportunity, then, you know, God put it on my heart to have something that was going to be community-based, you know, so that people come and join.
And it helps to know a creative builder too, right?
Yeah. That's me, by the way.
Oh, you're going to take all the credit.
Jimmy gets all the credit again. No, he's amazing. He sometimes thinks I'm crazy. So when I told him I was going to paint the house black, he wouldn't believe me. He actually made me act like a homeowner. He made me bring him the paint chip. And I had to sign off on it that I was going to paint it black. Really, wow. Yeah. But I had a rhyme for my reason, so it was that black and white I felt would really stand out and have that kind of a tuxedo look for it. And then I knew the barn was going to be black. So.
Yeah, he doesn't post on Facebook a lot, but when he posts what he's built, it's just absolutely amazing.
We have a lot of fun. Jim, my husband was a luxury builder for over 30 years up in the mountains.
And oh, wow.
So he's done municipal buildings and whole neighborhoods and different things. And you know, the crash came along and kind of changed everybody's life for a minute. And, you know, he kind of just sat back and relaxed for a second. And then, you know, God brought us together. And little to our surprise, we were going to be perfect for each other.
Wonderful.
Well, that's great. As mentioned, Springfield has been growing through going through the revitalization process for some time. The changes have positively impacted the city and the surrounding county. Can you tell us what goes on into making those decisions to help the city maintain conscientious growth?
Well, it has a lot to do with a lot of conversation, a lot of looking at our history, a lot of talking to the people that, you know, if you're not talking to your elders, you're not going to be really understanding how you got where you are and how you need to move forward. And so for us, it had to do a lot with, as city councilwoman, you know, I'm standing on the legacy of the other people that came before me and did a lot of the hard work of getting the government grants and the different things that we did that we used to transform Springfield from a town that went almost defunct when the bypass came in and just changed everybody's lives there back into something that was vital and needed in the community.
Yeah, wow.
So listening to your citizens helps a lot too.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Definitely. And now, being the county seat and being able to preserve county history while maintaining conscientious growth is a delicate balance. Can you tell us how the city of Springfield maintains its conscientious growth with respect for our history as being the county seat?
We've taken a good look at our ordinances and making sure that they work well in today's society with some of the things that are happening. We encourage small business. We have a lot of different programs for our small businesses, facade grants and different things that we partner with the small businesses to encourage diversity in the city. And then we listen to the people. Like, you know, if people will come to the meetings and tell me what you want, if the neighborhood says, you know, something, then we listen. You know, but it's hard when things come in front of you and you don't have anything from anyone else and all you have is an ordinance in front of you that says this is allowable. You know, so then how do you tell the landowner that they can't do what they want to do with their land? So you have to have that balance of listening to the neighborhood and the other citizens while still protecting property rights and landowner rights.
Well, with the citizens being offered that to give their input, is there a lot of feedback? Are they participating?
We're pretty lucky. we're pretty lucky because that I think that they see us working well together, mm-hmm. so they're not afraid to come in front of us and talk to us about it.
Yeah.
So I think that that has a positive impact because they know they're going to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with Springfield continuing to prosper with local merchants, do you think we'll see some sort of merchants organization in the future?
I hope so. I mean, we had one before, but it's very hard as small businesses, as most of you probably already know, that, you know, you give so many hours to your small business. And sometimes some of our business and merchants are a single, you know, single user, owner, user, you know, person. So if they shut down their shop for an hour to go somewhere and have a conversation, it's got to have value. You
right.
know, and I think that that is, you know, making sure that people understand that there's value in everybody getting together and having discussion and being, you know, together on certain things.
Absolutely. Do you think the merchants that are currently there would be willing to do that? Has there been any talk of it with the merchants?
I honestly don't know. I know the city would support it, of course.
You right.
know? And I do know that the way that, like, the Fall Festival came into realization was because the Merchants Association in the past created that. So those type of things are definitely available. And, you know, like I said, I would encourage it. You know, I know how difficult it is to run a small business because I run a couple of my own.
Right. And with the Fall Festival, that's been a pretty good, I think, a good turnout since it's been
yeah.
in existence. Do you see Springfield having any more festivals similar to that on different times of the year?
We like to. I mean, we have the Trunk or Treat is coming. Then Moncrief Square is partnering with the Downtown Development to bring that this year. We brought it by ourselves before, but,
yeah.
you know, now we have the support of the city that way. And, you know, anything that is community-based we think is extremely positive. I know that we have, you know, parades and different
yeah.
things, some Christmas parades coming, and now
yeah.
we have a new tree in the middle of town.
Yeah. And you guys also picked up the Freedom Day. Is it Freedom Day Parade?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Freedom
yeah.
Parade.
Freedom Parade. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're always excited.
Yeah.
You know, and we have the luxury of having the downtown corridor.
Right.
You know, as opposed to the other cities in the county.
Right.
And so it makes it really nice to be able to, you know, kind of control those crowds and control that situation so that you can have events that are, you know, family friendly and also bring a good crowd.
Yeah, right there in the county seat. Well, Dee, we want to thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing Springfield blossom into its fullest as the quaint town that we know under its current administration.
Thank you.
I have one more question
yes,
before
sir.
We move over to Mike. I hear that you've taken on a monumental task coming up here soon. So everybody knows December 7th, we're having the Light at Christmas Parade and the Navigator Light at Christmas Parade in Springfield. And I hear you've accepted a position as a judge.
I have. Yeah. I got told no, I can't. I did volunteer, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're very excited about it.
Good.
Yeah.
I appreciate you taking that position, and I'm hoping that we can make this parade the best ever, you know.
I'm excited about it being a lighted parade.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
it's going
to
be the first.
Yeah.
And I know those children of Navigators are so excited about this.
Yes.
So, and I appreciate everything you've done to help
you.
Us with this and the city of Springfield. They welcomed this thing with open arms,
yeah.
and I just can't be thankful enough for that.
Well, City Council has the blessing of a great staff that really does
they
make
go,
sure
they,
that we have, you know, I can't say enough about Matt Morris and his groups.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
They have
sure
a wonderful
right
group.
Absolutely
yes.
wonderful. Yeah, everybody's been courteous, and like Frank said, they just welcomed it with open
oh, yeah.
arms.
Community-based.
Yeah, you definitely get that in Springfield. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, Mike Gerwig, we're going to move on to you.
Oh.
Mike is the co-chair of planning and zoning for the city of Guyton. Mike, give us a rundown, if you would, on your role as co-chair of planning and zoning for the city of Guyton.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for inviting me. It's very nice to be here and meeting all these nice people. And also, I have to give a disclaimer. The views that you will hear from me are my own. They're not the official city views. I have to do that because only the mayor can speak for the official terms.
Right.
Could you ask that question again, please?
Could you give us a rundown of your role as co-chair
oh,
of planning and zoning
co-chair,
for the city?
I have a fill-in for Lon Harding when he is absent.
Okay.
I orchestrate and run the meetings and hearings.
Okay.
It's very important, and it's also very fun.
What interests you in accepting that appointment?
Well, actually, that's a good question. I was very excited about moving into Guyton, and I love the history of it. I love the idea that it was on the, you could see it was a diamond in the rough. You really can.
Right.
And I wanted to be a part of the rebuild or the build up of that. And the Laracy administration is when I was put on as, well, at that time I was just planning and zoning. But ever since then, you know, it's been really fun and really good to help shape the way Guyton is going.
And how long have you been on that board?
I know
you
said the eighth year.
Eighth year. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
And third administration.
Okay. You must be doing something right to hold that position.
Well, they're coming up with term limits on this administration, so okay. Maybe my time's coming to the end.
Yeah.
I would hope not, but, you know, the experience and knowledge that I bring and also the training you bring, it's pretty valuable. You just don't walk off the street and say, hey, I can do this.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's interesting.
There's a reason that it's looked at and they're selecting the people that would best fit that for the city.
I think all our committee is a good fit. Actually, they're very good. I mean, we work very well together. It's actually a lot of fun.
Good. What do you enjoy most about your position?
Well, the way we get emails saying a hearing or a proposal is coming up, and in those emails, that starts your homework. You start to either go to the site or you start investigating what's the infrastructure there or what the people's impact are, you know, people that live around it, what they're feeling. It's kind of like being an investigator, you know, and it's also kind of like being a historian, is what you were talking about, is you want to talk to people and you want to get the feel of what is their feelings so you know which way to go and you get a feeling what's best for the city and not just right off the paper we're doing this, you know.
Yeah.
We want to incorporate the people's views. We want to incorporate the history. We want to incorporate everything we possibly can and do the right thing.
So you enjoy interacting with the citizens on this?
Yes.
Sometimes
we've had some heated meetings.
Well, yeah, not everybody's going to agree on everything.
Know, sometimes when you talk planning and zoning, people get triggered.
Yeah.
You know, my house, the police, the traffic, you know, you just name it. It all comes up. And it's you gotta let them vent themselves. You gotta let them talk through it.
Right.
You just can't say, sit down, you know.
Yeah.
Give everybody a fair chance to express their views, which we keep in a very relaxed atmosphere so people feel more comfortable that they can talk to us. And it's not so formal. It's formal, but it's not formal. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like. So I think that's also a good thing that we do.
Yeah. Well, with the rapid growth of the city of Guyton, as with all the surrounding areas are experiencing, what are your thoughts on moratoriums to give communities an opportunity to make sure development is headed in the right direction?
Well, moratoriums, that's a good question. Moratoriums are not a political stunt. Moratoriums are designed for councils to get their plan on their master plan, what direction they want to go. If it's not being used for that and you're not one or two steps ahead of the rapid development, you're going to find yourself in a bad spot. So if constituents or people feel that the moratorium has been issued because they want a period to cool down or they want to push it off to the side, it's not true. It's a time to reflect on which direction is really right for that community or for that city.
Exactly. And it gives you time to change ordinances if need be.
Well, absolutely. You get ordinance changes, you get more input from people. It's really a time to develop a better master plan as you go forward.
Right. Okay. So when making decisions on planning and zoning in Guyton, how much consideration is given on green spaces?
Well, now I'm not bashing anybody here, but let's look at Polar. I mean, their rapid growth is unprecedented, in my opinion. I mean, it's like building, 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 building. And you don't see that much open space. You don't see that much greenery. You don't see, it's all you see is infrastructure. It's all you see is buildings. So in planning for future buildings or future developments, we always try to incorporate buffers. We always try to incorporate screens. We always try to have an open space so people can feel more relaxed. And people can, if they feel relaxed and they can go have recreation time, like, it would be great. That's what you want to do. That's the idea.
Right. Is there any updates on the park and recreation side in the city you could share with us currently?
Say that again?
Is there any updates on park and recreation in the city you could update us on?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I wish I could. I know that the county, I know that the county is planning in a long-range plan to connect all the parks together and to make it accessible for all the people in the area.
Which is the Hilo Trail.
There is also a trail that comes from Springfield to Guyton. Yes. Then if this is where the Hilo Trail would be wonderful, if we could entice everybody to join in and get in on the Hilo Trail to come from Savannah, to bring more and more tourists into our area, or bicyclers, or definitely more recreation, more influx for business. Just, it's an all around good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Now I understand you do some work on the walking trail.
Yes, I.
Can you tell us a little bit about the walking trail?
Well, yeah, I can tell you a lot about the walking trail.
Okay.
You may have noticed me as the Prairie Manis and the Arbor Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was volunteered, by the way, to be the Prairie Manis in the Arbor Day parade, which was fun because we got to design our own costumes and we get to shuffle down the walking trail. And
yeah.
That was kind of fun. The walking trail is a historic piece of property, actually. It runs through the center of the city. It used to be the old Central Railroad bed. And about 20, 25 years ago, it was asphalted over as to be an open space, which I think is a great, great asset to the city. There for a while, we started a garden committee, which we planted 105 camellias over on the Pilgrim Trail, which was a lot of fun, and they're doing well, by the way. But ever since we dissolved the garden club, and so now it's back to being what it was.
Yeah. How long is that trail if you were to walk it?
Oh, wow. I've walked that trail, and it's about a mile and a quarter.
Okay. All right.
And if you walk it fast, it doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really doesn't.
Do you still have a lot of people that use it on a daily basis?
I know Mr. Norris sitting over there. I know he has some people that do it. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a mainstay for the city. I mean, everybody loves walking on the trail.
I know my mother thanks a lot. She's got her little group of ladies that go and walk, her little church friends that go and walk.
I've seen them bragging
about how beautiful it looks, and they're always out there looking for you out there with the plants and everything. So good job.
Yeah.
On the way.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I was a horticulturalist for 50 years, so it just kind of comes natural.
Oh, so what would it take to get a garden committee back up?
Well, there is kind of a quasi one with the Effingham Green. You know, it's kind of, I think just a wink and a nod would take it to get it back started, really. Mm-hmm. A little more interest, you know. That's about it.
You say quasi, how many people do you have?
The Effingham Green, I'm not really sure their personnel, but I know of three right off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. So, and they're promoting open spaces and things for communities as Effingham County grows. You usually see them at the meetings. They want more trails. They want more open space. They want things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much you knew about this, but the YMCA that just got built there, wonderful facility. Has that promoted more people to come out there walking and everything, on the trails and everything? Being as right there where the trails are?
I don't know it's done that, but I know it's brought more people to Guyton to go to the Y.
Okay.
I mean, and with speaking of trunk or treat, that will also be added to the trunk or treat. You can go there and
right,
in the parking lot and do trunk or treat after you do the on the trail.
Right.
That's very exciting.
I've been in there. It's a very beautiful facility.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was there opening day. It's
smart equipment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really, I mean, I was, when opening day, I was impressed by the amount of people there. I really was. I said, wow, that parking lot was full, and people were really interested.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's another prime example how Effingham's footprint is expanding, and it's a good thing. So one of the things that in an expansion, that's when we talk about recreation, there you go. Mm-hmm. You got it right there.
Yeah. You know, and speaking of recreation, we went to a town hall. I'd went to a couple of them. But I was surprised to find out that with all of the polls that they had taken for parks and recreation, walking trails was the number one requested thing out of everything.
In that survey, that was amazing, wasn't it?
Yes.
Open space.
And again, they're listening and they're doing that. They've got some plans and projects for a lot of trails.
That was the pond survey, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Well, Mike, thank you for coming on the show. And we're interested to see what's in store for Guyton.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you.
Yes, sir.
And thank you again for taking care of that trail. Well, anybody takes care of my mom, I'm very appreciative.
Oh, yeah. You know, I talked to her so many times. I never introduced myself. I just say hi, you know, or something like that. Right. Sometimes she's a little bit... She doesn't talk much.
Oh, you get to know her. She'll talk.
Yeah, I try. I was afraid. Don't get her started. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. Nick Springer, you're director of programs at the Treatland House, correct?
That's correct.
Good. You know, I'm a little surprised at some people that don't know what the Treatland House is. Ever since I've been here for 40 years now, I've always known about the Treatland House. And I just know it's a great facility, and I know that me and some of my organizations, we're always taking food over there and giving donations over there, and I've always considered it to be a wonderful, wonderful place and something great for the community. But I want to give you the chance to tell the rest of the people out there listening, what is the Treatland House?
We're a group home for boys that are in foster care. We keep boys that are age 12 to around 21 years old. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about when it was established?
We have paperwork going back to 1998. It's our earliest paperwork where it was being discussed. And there was a huge community fundraiser to raise the money. I know the Neese family and Richard Kessler made some large donations to get it started. And it was opened around year 2000.
That's good. And it's been going strong since then. Y'all have an established board there?
Yeah, there's a board of directors that
right.
we work under.
Okay. And y'all are tax exempt.
Yeah, we're a 501c3 nonprofit.
Right. And tell us about how the boys get there. You know, there's a lot of questions that's been asked me about the Treatland House, about how a child would wind up at the Treatland House. And I've never really known the full answer, but I'm sure you do.
Yeah, we get a lot of phone calls from people wanting to bring their kids over and drop them off, and they just can't do that. All of our kids were placed there by DFACs. They're in foster care. And most of them are in foster care because of abuse, neglect, or they were abandoned.
Mm-hmm. And what's the max amount of boys that the Treatland House can facilitate?
We can keep up to 10 boys there at a time, is what our license is for. We usually stay around 8. 8's a comfortable number, and it gives us some room if we have an emergency weekend placement or, you know, we need to help a local agency out. We have some room to do that.
Right. Do y'all have proper staff? Do y'all need staff?
We have at least one part-time job opening right now.
Mm-hmm. So how would somebody apply? What's the job?
It's a part-time house parent, and it's mostly at night. Mm-hmm. We have somebody that stays up all night to make sure that everybody's where they're supposed to be and if anybody needs any help.
Is there any certain qualifications for that position other than having sleep apnea, sleeping up all night?
Experience with teenagers is a big plus on that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, how would one apply for that?
They can email us at treatlandhouse@windstream.net or me personally at ndspringer@treatlandhouse.com.
Okay. So tell me tell me and, you know, the audience a little bit more about the house for anybody that's never been there. You know, what size of the house, how many rooms you got, what's the property like, you know, things like that.
It's a big house. I'm not sure the square footage. It takes 3 air conditioners to keep it cool. It's got 3 large bedrooms for the boys. We have 2 double bathrooms. We have a big laundry room, 2 washers, 2 dryers, and a large kitchen that a lot of the kids will help out during dinner and help a cook.
On the property, do y'all have like ball fields? Or, I think I saw a ball field last time.
Yeah, we have a field. We have a basketball court and a lot of woods. It's around 100 acres in that piece of property.
100 acres. Yeah. And what else besides sports do they do out there? Do y'all do like any gardening or any kind of?
We stuff? Usually have a garden in the spring, and we have a bird project. We have chickens, guineas, peacocks, pheasants, and some of the kids help out with that project.
I think I've seen that before. Were y'all selling the chickens or selling the?
We normally sell chickens and guineas.
Right. I thought I saw that before. That's good. That's good. It's good teaching the boys how to homestead like that. Does the Treatland House have any special events coming up?
We had to skip our fall festival due to hurricane tornado damage on the property. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to reschedule that for the first weekend of March is our plan right now. Follow us on Facebook, keep up how that goes.
What other events do y'all have throughout the year? Because I'm always seeing, I know y'all have a 5K, right?
Yeah, we do a 5K, 10K trail run. That's our big fundraiser.
And where does that go through?
That's on our property and the retreat center's property.
Okay.
Through the woods.
So it crosses over the street into the retreat center?
Okay. Yep, around the cemetery and back.
How many participants do you think you have in those?
It's usually over 100, 115, 120,
30. Wow. That's good. Any other notable events that you have over there?
Not anything scheduled right now.
Okay. So how long have you been with the Treatland House?
I've been there since 2012.
Okay. Can you tell us some about some of the biggest success stories that you've seen since you've been there?
We keep up with a lot of our former residents. I know as far as former residents, we still talk to. I've got at least one working at the ports. We have an electrician, several in construction. We've got one working in retail management. We've got a couple in college and in the military.
All right. If somebody wanted to donate to the Treatland House, how would they do that?
They can mail us a check. We have a PayPal account. We have an Amazon wish list. We're on Amazon Smile, and they can always stop by and just drop off with us.
You have an address for that mail?
It's 131 Old Augusta Central Road, Rincon.
Right. So that Amazon Smile, as you was talking about, for the one people don't know, years ago I signed up for that, and I picked the Treatland House as my charity. And for the people who don't know, you go to this, I think it's AmazonSmiles.com, and you pick your charity, and what they do is they round a percentage up of everything you buy.
Yeah, it still costs you the same thing. They just round it up.
They just round it up and give a percentage. They send us a check. Right. And, you know, I was shocked. I think a couple months ago, I opened it up, and it said, I was opening up Amazon, of course, to buy something. And this will show you how much I use Amazon. And it told me that I had a donation going to the Treatland House for like $200. And I was like, wow. And I don't know how long it took to build that up, but it reminded me. And I signed up for it years ago. I just sort of forgot. And so I was like, wow, that's cool. So that Amazon Smiles is a very good thing to get y'all some money. So tell me about some of the trips that the boys have been on.
We do regular trips during the summer to Wild Adventures. We usually make trips to the aquarium and the zoo in Atlanta. We've done some trips to the mountains in the past, and we've got a kayak and trailer and some kayaks. We do a pretty good bit of kayaking during the summer with them.
Well, thank you for coming out here to beautiful Stillwell Pines and joining us today. If there's anything, you know, that my organizations can help, you know, with the Treatland House, you know, just reach out to me. I wish you the best of luck, and you know, hopefully we can take some of those young men that you got and facilitate them for the workforce in the future. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Curtis Parker, Yes, sir. You know, you got a wonderful story, and there's a lot of things I want to touch on during your story. But, you know, I first just want to talk about you picked the perfect wife, right?
Ellie. Oh, yeah. Ellie. Works for the school system here in Effingham.
That's right. And she come from
tolerates a lot from me.
That's right.
I consider myself local, you know, moving here, you know, since middle school. But, yeah, I would say her family is 6th generation local.
The Tootin. So,
Pretty solid.
I know she's the concrete.
And even her stepdad, you know, is from up in Scriven County.
Right.
All the way back in the day, so.
Right. Yeah. So, but there's a lot of things about you I want to talk about. First, and I know you're here for firefighter pressure washing. Wonderful business.
Correct.
You built that from the floor up. And we're going to touch on that in just a minute. But also, you know, you're a fireman over in Savannah. You've been a lifetime fireman ever since you come out of school. You've been into the fire department. I would just want to ask a question. Can you tell us what the family life is like being married to a fireman?
I tell guys that want to go in the fire service, try to talk them into it. It's great. I love it. You know, I'm ate up with it. But it's definitely a game changer going from being a single firefighter to a married firefighter. You have to have an awesome wife, very understanding wife. She picks up so much when I'm not there. I will say this, at least the department I'm at, they give us a lot of vacation, a lot of holiday, and it accrues more every 5 years. So right now, I am bragging. I get about 9 weeks of paid vacation throughout the year.
Wow. You deserve it, yeah.
And so I try to spend a lot of that time. What I do is I spend 2 of those vacations, because you pick them ahead of time, you pick 3 different vacation slots. I usually spend 2 of those actually with the business. And then one of those is usually a good family vacation. That's kind of how I do it. But as far as with the marriage life, it's like any marriage. It's very much give and take. Mm-hmm. And you have to be there for each other and, you know, just realize that. I'm blessed that my wife is always the first one to tell me, you know, I love you and be safe. I mean, she understands the job. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's an awesome job, but it definitely has its unique challenges.
Right. Can you tell us any stories about on the fire department that might have been maybe scary, maybe challenging at the time?
I was at the sugar refinery.
Oh, wow.
I think I was the fourth due engine company on that one. Well, everybody knows about that. We were there at the war fire that night, which was our most recent big one. I've been to a lot of deceased calls. Some of the sadder ones are, I've been to deceased police officers, so seeing other people that where it kind of hits home. Went to a scary call one night where we got called to a small structure fire, and we were the second due truck company, which means we were a second alarm, which means it got pretty serious. The house flashed on the guys, which is, I guess in layman's terms, would be backdraft, rollover. And 1,300 square feet house, and I thought I was going to be pulling a dead fireman out that night. The guys were rolling out the door when the house flashed. That one turned out to be a blessing that nobody was seriously hurt, and the reason why they stayed in is there was a victim in there, and those guys stayed in too long, and it shows you kind of how the fire service is, and that there is no greater thing you can do than give your life for another. And those, I can name those guys in that other company, and I watched them put their life in harm's way and roll out when that thing was flashing. And they were in there that long just trying to find someone, hoping that person was alive. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of gruesome stories I don't want to go into, but I've seen a lot of, you know, there's some positive things there too. Some things that are like, wow, you survived that, or wow, you did that. And I'm not talking about even just firefighters, you know. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised by what you see a citizen do. With a good adrenaline rush. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it definitely is a unique career, and it's never boring.
Right.
And day to day, if you want to be at a busy station, there's a lot of things you can see and be involved with.
Right. And I personally want to thank you for putting your life on the line, you know, putting your family to the side to put your life on the line for the rest of the community out here. A lot of people sometimes that gets lost in their thought processes from day to day. That, you know, these police officers, these fire departments, or people working at the fire department, EMC and all that, they're actually putting their life on the line every single day just to, you know, to protect you. Mm-hmm. So I just want to thank you very much for that. Moving on, you know, you have firefighter pressure washing.
Which the best part about my company, and it's actually Firefighter Power Wash, is my customers are the ones that told me to change the name. I had a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember.
Mostly only firefighters to help me and to pay the guys well. And, you know, because we're not in this line of work to get rich. And then a lot of the guys actually talk into doing their own other business because so many guys have different skill sets. But it was actually the customers, you know, stand out from somebody else, stand out from people that don't have insurance, that don't have this. We know you know how to be professional.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I got the company name.
All right. And how far do you spread out? I mean, obviously Effingham, but...
Oh, I'm Effingham, Savannah. I mean, I just did a job a couple of months ago on the beach in Hilton Head, which
right.
was a beautiful view, by the way, which I know you're interested in real estate. It was a gorgeous house.
There's
a doctor in Savannah. You would definitely know who he was.
On average, how many jobs do you do a month? Can you?
A lot of the guys that do pressure washing, I kind of am like, how do the guys do it full-time?
Mm-hmm.
Stay in it. They must be really good at budgeting. Because you'll go 6 months where it's really, really hectic. You'll go 3 or 4 months where it slows down. You'll go 2 months where it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So even with my full-time career.
And family.
And family. And only having 3, maybe 4 days off in a week.
Mm-hmm.
On the busy season, I can easily do anywhere from 12 to 20 jobs.
Wow.
So,
wow.
But once again, and it. The dead time of year, you might do 2 in a week, 3 in a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I kind of, the guys that make it work, the big companies that mm-hmm. put a lot of work in, and we all know being entrepreneurs at some level, it's definitely what you put into it. So the
yeah.
guys that do the pressure washing full time and can make it profitable year round,
right.
definitely, I'm surprised sometimes. It's awesome.
And I know you must be doing pretty good with your company because you have an offer out there, I understand. To any low-income family that would be in need of a pressure washing, you're willing to do that if they...
It kind of started just people referring me. I do a lot of referral, a lot of, like, just word of mouth. So I do different jobs for free every year, whether it's a widow or whatever. So last year's job wasn't local. It was actually down in Richmond Hill. And it happened to be a lady who was recently widowed within 2 years, but she had an adult disabled kid, like 35-year-old, would never leave the home. Found it out. My buddy actually told me about her and went and washed the house. Early this year, this is local, a firefighter from New Jersey, I'm not going to say their name, him and his wife retired here, live on a small farm north of Guyton. And it was with... his daughter who ended up here. And I don't usually put out the signs. I don't really like the signs, but now it's kind of going into my busy season, so I put out some signs. I get a call about this lady's like, yeah, my husband made me hire this firefighter sign, right? I had maybe 3 signs in the county. So come to find out, he was a firefighter from New Jersey for 30 something years. He's a federal guy, and he worked out where they used to test armament. He had esophageal cancer, and it was terminal. Mm-hmm. And he insisted that his wife pay me because he knew what firefighters made salary-wise. I didn't charge him much. The awesome part about it was is I cleared it with all the shifts, all my captains, and I knew because my station is in the Medical Arts District, Station 1 in Savannah. And I talked to his wife about, you know, next time he's in town, you know, have him stop by the station. Well, I don't know if he can. He's so sick, blah, 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 blah. So this is like 2 months out of nowhere, right? She calls me. Hey, he's feeling great today. He's with his son. Can they stop by? Oh, yeah. I think she called me the day ahead. I was like, I'll be on shift tomorrow. And they come by the station, and our station was built in the late 50s, which is awesome for him because he was in his 70s. And he hung out with us for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Right.
So luckily, it was cool because some of the overtime, some of the guys that were there were have been on longer than me, and we have photo albums. He went through it, and he actually looked really good, you know, for that far along with a terminal cancer. And I got a message from his widow 6 weeks later that he had passed away. And, so that was the one I did early this year. Mm-hmm. I still wanted to give another one, but it was awesome that that one was here. I got to meet this old firefighter who happened to move into our community, even though he was from nowhere near here. And I was like, man, I would hope that somebody that had that passion
right.
that I had when I'm that age would give back to me. And it was really caught me. I was like, oh, yeah, it's open. And 2 months later, you don't expect to hear back. But luckily, he comes by the station. So, yeah, but yes, I definitely want to put that out there. I try to give away at least one house wash or whatever. I prefer for it to be a reference, a referral, because it's always better that somebody's like, hey, here's this backstory, somebody that really needs it. And I'm blessed that my full-time job can pay the bills. And if I don't have to live off the pressure washing this week, it doesn't matter. And I can do that.
So right.
definitely, it's something I want to do.
If somebody wanted to refer, how would they do that?
They call me, text me. I'll give my cell phone number. It's 912-228-2188.
There you go.
And definitely just reach out. Like I said, that last case was a terminal patient, but the one before I was just a lady who was recently widowed and who's had a handicapped adult son. And I'm like, I'm not gonna charge her. I know her hands are full.
So, all right, fireman, business owner. Now let's talk a little about your family. You got three kids.
Correct.
Twins.
Correct.
Two, yeah. And you got one kid, Mr. Merritt. I know. I've watched you through the years. I've watched the story with Merritt. And I want you to share your story about Merritt and, you know, bless his heart. And, you know, what it's been like for a family with a special needs child. And how you and Ellie both, I mean, don't want to leave Ellie out on this, how you both have been able to first explain his situation and then tell us how y'all handled it as a couple.
So my oldest is 14 and we had surprise second pregnancy, which was twins when 2 years later. And we knew early in the pregnancy that one of the twins had some issues. It's not complicated things, but it is. Basically, he had two blood vessels instead of three. Which is fairly common, but in a twin, when it happens, one twin gets all the nutrients, the other one doesn't. So they tried to have us terminate just his pregnancy, which we took that off the table right away.
I remember when they came in and asked Ellie, and she said, take my baby.
Yeah, that was first trimester. So we knew right out of the gate. So he was born a pound. Mm-hmm. His sister was 5 and a half. His sister was in and out in the NICU in no time. He was there 4 months. Well, that led to a lot of other developmental things, and you get all these scares, and he's a blessing. You would never know that he has all these issues now. But the big one, and it's one that we can still struggle with eating-wise, was he was on a feeding tube for 8 years. He never had one bit of food cross his lips for six. And around the 6 year, firefighters and actually another pressure washing company out of Savannah and the family raised money for us to go to a feeding tube therapy program in Austria, and the program, going, hotel, everything, staying over there for the better part of the month was $35,000. The same program in the U.S., just the program, was $60,000. Wow. Just the program. So my wife and her level of education, she really knows all this and knows all the details. And that has kind of been like a huge primary concern through our marriage. With Merritt, though, he's a blessing because he progresses. So every time they say he can't do this, he shows the doctor they're wrong in 12 to 24 months. We have a couple other friends from college who have legit serious disabled children that will never leave the house. My son is a miracle. You know, now it's, you know, still get him to eat enough, or the fact that, you know, he has dyslexia, learning disability type things, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, those type of things. But as far as like what they were trying to tell us, you know, faith, prayer, and family, also strong spouse, it's amazing what you can get through. I will say this about having a disabled kid. it either makes or breaks your marriage. There's no middle ground. I feel like with me and my wife that everything else is easier. I mean, I really do. 12 years with him, I mean, as long as my kids aren't in the house, if the house burns down and the tree lands on the car in the next hour, I'm going to be like, oh well. You know?
Yeah.
As long as nobody's in it. Because if you go through this type of pressure year in and year out for so long, and when I say a feeding tube, we're talking about 6 years feeding him every 4 hours, like an infant. So that's what the stress was. And that's another reason why I was so concerned with building my business. You know, yeah, the fire department has good insurance and helped with a lot of that, but they weren't going to pay for a therapy program in Austria. Mm-hmm. They won't pay for some of these other outreach programs, these other things he needs, the visits to Nemours and
right.
down to Jacksonville and stuff like that.
Right.
But yes, that has been a center of the family hub is a lot of his needs. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think with a great spouse and a good church and good family and good support, you know, and luckily his sisters are awesome. His twin is awesome. His 14-year-old is awesome. They help with a lot of it too. So,
okay. So let's try this one more time. Fireman, businessman, family, special needs child.
Correct.
There's one more story that I want you to tell us about. And a lot of people don't know this about you. So tell us a little bit about Fred.
Oh, so I wanted to make my wife mad.
Okay. Jimmy can teach you.
Yeah. So, at the time that we're having these kids, I was the first person to play college soccer from Effingham. When I moved here from Atlanta, they didn't have a high school team. Me and some other guys started the high school team. So, at that time, this was back in 2014-15, I was big into coaching. I coached for free. I coached club and I assisted with high school. I did 15 or 16 teams. A lot of the kids were your type of boys. I had boys teams where they couldn't afford teenagers, Hispanic kids couldn't afford, and me and some of the other people in the community, mainly Salvador and El Real, would sponsor the money and I would do the coaching, right? Now, what people don't know is my mom's side of the family is Mexican. So Salvador told me I had to be at least part Mexican to give me respect for the Mexican players. So, but you know, but Salvador did a lot of the financial and I did a lot of the coaching. So I was doing high school at the time too. I knew we had a good high school team. And I decided to host an exchange student from Brazil to have us live with him for a year. Now you got to think, disabled twins that are two,
right? Yeah.
And other ones four. And I brought in a Brazilian exchange student to live with us for a year. We won our first soccer region title at Effingham. We won everything we went into for club. I ended up getting a scholarship in soccer for college here. He stayed here, and because it was so expensive to travel back and forth, he only went home twice in 4 years.
Wow.
He comes from a really great family. His brother is works for Samsung as an engineer. His sister just graduated medical school. Both his parents are professors. Mm-hmm. And he's 27 and in finance. And his banking company that he's with was just in, like, the Wall Street Journal yesterday. But so that was another thing I gave back was I was coaching a group of kids that were good, and there a lot of kids off that team have turned out to be awesome. Business owners, doctors, all kinds of things off that team. And we were missing that link, and I kind of went to the extreme and brought in a Brazilian exchange student. So now but my wife was not happy at the time, but now he's like another son. My kids don't even know life without him because they were so young. And now that he makes really good money for where he lives in Brazil, he makes very good money.
Yeah.
He makes surprise visits like two or three times a year and comes up and sees him.
That's amazing.
So he speaks three or four languages and he's really put together. So, but it's almost like this outside family thing where we got another family. And yeah, we're a family of five with a six that comes in and out now.
It could be an extended family.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is extended. We've met his family. They've came up for his college graduation and all that. And I got him, I knew his school where I was at in North Georgia near where I went to college. Truett McConnell. It was a good school and that's where I got him a scholarship at and he stayed there. Oh, and he won their first region title.
Wow.
Ever two. And they went from no Brazilians to eight when he left.
I mean, just what an inspirational story, you know, the things that you've been able to accomplish, you know, since school. And, you know, I've known you my whole life, so of course I've experienced a lot of this stuff with you and been there with you through the tears and the pain. And I just want to thank you for never giving up and always being there and doing the right thing. And I hope everybody out there is listening. You know, this is firefighter pressure washing. I've worked with Curtis many a times, and I know how well he does his work and how perfectionist he is. So I would encourage everybody to give him a chance. Move on to the roundtable discussion here.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to talk about the festivals coming up. Curtis, I'll let you weigh on it since you just told us all about your kids. Tell us about some of the festivals that you've been to here locally.
Springfield, we got all of them. My parents live in Springfield. They've lived there 20-something years. Yeah. So if we can get a date night every now and then, we'll drop them off at Grandma's. And even Grandma has to take them on the golf cart up to anything. Also, you know, right now we got the fair going on. So they're twisting my arm about going there. And like we were saying earlier, they love any kind of live music, anything.
The
like
blessing
that.
About Springfield is we're golf cart friendly,
and it's great for live
and
music
it's
too.
Just
it's easy,
amazing
to
for community, and because it kind of gives you that almost walkability. But even for our seniors,
right,
you know, they can jump on a golf cart and go where
everything's
they
accessible.
Yeah,
connectivity is very big.
Yeah,
are y'all having live music at your trunk and treat?
I don't. You're putting me on the spot. I have no idea.
Okay. All right.
To be honest with you, I don't know. My daughter, Ashley Moncrief, runs Moncrief Square mm-hmm. for us, and so she's the architect of all that.
Okay. All right. And y'all still do the third Thursday?
We do. We just had Jason Courtney in this week and had a great time. The weather, I love it when the weather changes and we light the big fireplaces.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
So my lodge meets F&M Springfield. I mean Springfield for 40 meets first and third Thursday,
yeah.
And as you know, we're right above y'all.
Yeah.
So y'all get that music playing. It takes our meetings to another level.
That's great.
I remember we were sitting there, we're in the middle of a meeting, all of a sudden Conway Twitty comes in. Way to spice it up, Mike. I know there's some things coming on up in Guyton, you know, festival wise.
Yes, we just had the Falls Town Latrell yesterday, and coming up
good
is
turnout.
Yes, there are always a good turnout for that. It also the local businesses open up and they have sales, so people go there as well and check them out. Coming up, we have the trunk or treat, which will be extended over into the YMCA, which is very interesting. I mean, that's the first year they're going to do that, and we're very encouraging. And of course, we have the Christmas parade, which is an annual event.
And what's the date on that?
I believe it's the 7th. Don't hold me to that, but I believe so.
Okay.
And it starts at 10?
What's that?
It starts at 10?
Usually, yes. Yeah. I mean, it sometimes a little later, you know, but usually around that time.
Do you know who the parade marshal is this year?
No, I don't.
You don't?
That's always a secret until...
Okay.
You know.
The day of?
Yeah. Well, most the day of, anyway.
Okay. All right. We'll try to keep our parade a little secret. Although we've revealed one of the judges.
Well, you got a judge sitting right here.
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't see any money pass in, so things are cool.
We've still got a few more surprises we haven't talked about with the Springfield parade that we'll be letting people know as time goes on.
More to be unveiled?
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
We're full of surprises.
You guys do a wonderful job in Springfield.
Thank you.
You really do.
All right. Well, that's about our time for the day. I want to thank everybody for coming in today. You know, all the inspirational stories, you know, Trutland House, everything that's going on in Guyton, Springfield. Thank y'all so much. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up and end it for the day, but I hope y'all come back on.
Just ask.
That's right. Thank you so much. And we're just going to...
Before we go, though, we want to let everybody know that we're changing our days. We're actually going to broadcast next week, October 27th, and then our schedule will be.
So on our next episode, what we're trying to put together, it's going to be a special episode. It's going to be Women in Power. Mm-hmm. I think we have a really good cast forming together. I think it's a way to give back and talk about the women that are in power here in the local community and their experiences with the community and government. So hopefully everybody will tune in next week for that.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.